This is the Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com. You can call us at 440-579-2531. Send us an email at studio@sportstalknetwork.com or follow us on Twitter at SportsTalkNet. The Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com starts now.
Hello again, everybody. This is Steve Callis on The Steve Callis Show. We're going to do something a little different today. We're going to talk about three different topics that are, I think, at least of interest and importance in the world of sport today. We'll spend about 15 minutes on each one, but the first topic that we're going to talk about are just what's happened to professional sports today, specifically regular season versus playoffs within the four major sports: football, baseball, basketball, hockey, specifically mainly football and baseball. If you grew up whenever in hockey and in basketball, the 50s, the 60s, obviously no NBA till 47. The NHL started, I believe, in 1917-18, but for decades, those two sports, in my view, too many teams made the playoffs. Going back to the original six in hockey, four teams made the playoffs, to now where you have 16 teams in basketball and hockey making the playoffs. The problem there has always been the regular season has not been that important. You kind of like to get into the playoffs, but it wasn't a big deal if you had a so-so season. Nowadays, teams at the 500 level or even on occasion under 500 can make the playoffs. It's really more about what's happened to football, and I think even more importantly, baseball, because once upon a time in baseball, you had to win to win. In football, you had to win to win. There was no such thing as a second-place team making the playoffs, a wild-card team making the playoffs, a loser, if you will, making the playoffs. But I did want to focus on the history of pro football, and to me, the two reasons why football and baseball have changed over the last few decades. And we can go, in football, we can go back to example, back all the way back to 1948, when back then there were actually only 10 teams in the NFL. There was an Eastern Division and the Western Division. They played the regular season, and then the Eastern Division played the Western Division for the championship of football. But in 1948, it was maybe one of those years where you had a sense, obviously I wasn't around then, but you had a sense that maybe something had to change in the future, because in 1948 the Chicago Bears went 10-2, 12-game season back then, obviously, and they did not make the playoffs. These were the Bears of Sid Luckman and Johnny Lujack, and the Chicago Cardinals, who were in their division, went 11-1. So it was simply the Cardinals who won the West and the Eagles who won the East, with a 9-2-1 record, by the way, not as good as the Bears, who played for the championship, and thus the Chicago Bears at 10-2 did not make the playoffs. That was during the world again of the 12-game, two-division NFL season. Flash forward to 1963. The Packers had won the NFL championship in 1961 and 1962. In 1963, they went 11-2-1. This, of course, was the Lombardi Packers. Now, interestingly, that year, Paul Hornung, their star running back, was suspended for gambling, as was Alex Karras. And, you know, they bet like a couple hundred dollars on a few games, and they were suspended for a season. So the Packers went 11-2-1, did not make the playoffs. The Giants won the East at 11-3. The Chicago Bears won the West at 11-1-2, and they played for the championship. So you start to see now, back then, there were seven teams in the East, seven teams in the West, 14 teams. Only the winners played in the playoffs for the championship. Again, back then there was a one-game playoff. Then maybe people almost started to see what was going on. In 1967, there were four divisions of four teams, almost a precursor, if you will, to what's happened in the NFL today. They only played 14 games, and that year, unfortunately for the Baltimore Colts, they were in the same division as the Los Angeles Rams. And the Colts were 11-1-2. The Rams were 11-1-2. But since the Rams and the Colts tied in the first game and the Rams beat the Colts in the second game, giving Baltimore their only loss, the Rams went into the playoffs, and the Colts at 11-1-2 with Johnny Unitas as the MVP of the league didn't make the playoffs. Then, as you know, right at this time, literally in 67, that was the beginning of the Super Bowl era. Obviously, 66, 67, 68 were the first three Super Bowls. The Packers were only 9-4-1 in 67, but would go on, of course, to win the second Super Bowl. And in 67, the Colts were arguably the best team. Johnny Unitas won every individual award, but they didn't make the playoffs. The other division winners were 9-5, 9-5, and 9-4-1. So you can understand back then the unfairness of, for example, not having a wild card. Now, I just bring up those records to give you what happened then, and now we'll just flash forward to what's happening now. You had a situation this year where the 9-7 Giants, 9-7, won their division on the last game of the season, beating the Cowboys, then went all the way to the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl. Can you imagine if back in the 40s or 50s or 60s, a 9-7 team winning the Super Bowl? Virtually unfathomable. This year, 2011 season, with the playoffs in 2012, the Denver Broncos won their division at 8-8 and actually got a home playoff game and, as you know, beat the Steelers. Last year, 2010 season, the Seattle Seahawks, 7-9, win their division, get a home game, and beat the defending champions New Orleans Saints. A home playoff win for the 7-9 Seattle Seahawks. So, to me, and certainly in the last, I'll say, 10 years or so, yes, more teams, yes, more playoff teams, yes, two wild cards. But now the regular season, to me, has been greatly cheapened. And don't forget, the Eagles in the 2011 season were 4-8, 4-8, and still had a chance to make the playoffs. In fact, if the Giants hadn't gone 9-7, if they had gone 8-8, the Eagles would have won the NFC East, and you could have had a team that was 4-8, 8-8 in the regular season, go to and possibly win the Super Bowl. Of course, that did not happen, but hopefully you get the point. You can say whatever you want about the old days where teams were deprived of the playoffs with unbelievable records, and I agree with that. But I still think today, and we'll get to baseball in a minute, that you have to have some kind of bottom level. How can you have a 7-9 team not only make the playoffs but get a home game? If it's to division winners and you could have a team 6-10 win a division, I guess that's almost possible. Again, we had one in 2010 at 7-9. What's happened is twofold. Teams decades ago really got the shaft with unbelievable records, and I totally agree with that. How can you have a team that goes 11-1-2? Not make the playoffs, as happened to the Colts in 1967. I agree with that. Having said that, how can you have 500 teams get home games? How can you have 7-9 teams get home games and win playoff games? How can you have a 9-7 team, and the Giants are the first 9-7 team to win the Super Bowl? How can you have those kinds of things? What does that tell you about the regular season? So some people today will say, well, it's just a rare exception, but that misses the point. Once upon a time, if you were 8-8, you were going home hoping to get better next year where you could go 12-4 and maybe be in the playoffs. But that doesn't really happen anymore. It really is amazing. I know in 2008, the Patriots went 11-5. They had no Tom Brady, you'll recall. They were coming off that 18-0 we lose in the Super Bowl to the Giants 2007 season. 11-5, they didn't make the playoffs, and it was like the biggest crime in the history of the world had been committed. Do I think a team who goes 11-5 should make the playoffs nowadays? Yeah, I guess so. Because they're, at least in theory, better than a 7-9 team that wins their division, or better than an 8-8 team that wins their division. But this is what's happened to me. The regular season has almost been stood on its head, where once upon a time you could be unbelievably good and not make the playoffs, to today where you can be mediocre to bad, 7-9, 8-8, 9-7 to me is pretty mediocre. 7-9 to me is bad. And not only make the playoffs, but in the case of the 9-7 Giants, win the Super Bowl. Is this ever going to change? Well, the reason it's not going to change is money, money, money. You want to keep as many teams in the loop, in the mix, with a chance to make the playoffs. Again, the Philadelphia Eagles in 2011 could have made the playoffs at 4-8. They ran the table to 8-8 and lost the NFC East to the Giants by one game. So too in baseball. Now, again, baseball, did you ever have these kinds of situations we just talked about in football? Well, I found a few. The one that comes to my mind always is the 1954 Yankees. You know, back in 2001 when Seattle won 116 games and the Yankees beat them in the playoffs, Seattle was viewed to be essentially a phony club. Yeah, they were great in the regular season, but so what? But if you go back to baseball before 1969, essentially 8 teams or 9 teams or 10 teams in the 60s, before 61, essentially 8 teams, 154 games, the winners played in the World Series. So you had a great season if you won the pennant because you went to the World Series. So what happened in 2001? The Yankees beat Seattle in the playoffs. Seattle's 16 wins are viewed almost to be meaningless. The Yankees go on and lose that epic World Series to the Diamondbacks. But what about the flip side of that? You know, they say how hard it is to win the World Series today because there are so many layers of playoffs, and they're right. But, for example, the Yankees in 2001 wouldn't have even made the playoffs if they were in an 8-team league with Seattle 50 years ago or 60 years ago. So, for example, in 1954, the New York Yankees were coming off winning 5 World Series in a row. They went 103-51, didn't make the playoffs, went home, came in second, 8 games behind the then record-setting 111 wins Cleveland Indians. In 1942, the Brooklyn Dodgers, 104-50. How about that? Not good enough. The Cardinals were 106-48. I always say it's the reverse of what happened to the Seattle Mariners and the Yankees in 2001. Don't you think the Yankees would have won the wild card in 1954 with 103 wins? Don't you think the 42 Brooklyn Dodgers would have won the wild card with 104 wins? Of course they would have. So it cuts both ways when you're talking about who should make one. You can go all the way back to 1909, the Cubs. And you know the story of the Chicago Cubs. They last won the World Series in 1908. Everybody knows that who knows baseball. Well, in 1909, the year after, these are the Tinker to Evers to Chance Cubs. They went 104-49, but they came in second to the Pirates, who were 110-42. So these teams have also popped up, but now what's happened in baseball? That's been stood on its head as well. Wild card teams, no problem. You want more wild card teams? It looks like in 2012 you might even get more wild card teams. Is that ridiculous? Well, I always thought it was ridiculous to have a wild card team. I think you'd be better off with a bunch of divisions and have the division winners win and go on, because baseball was the last sport, and I always thought different because of it, to allow losers to win. But now you have a number of teams who have won the wild card. You know they went to divisions in 69. You know they went to the wild card in 94. In 1997, the Florida Marlins did not win their division, and they won the World Series. And it happened again in 2002 with Anaheim, and 2003 with the Marlins again, and 2004 with the Boston Red Sox, and 2011 with the St. Louis Cardinals, who were pretty terrible most of the year. But they had a strong September. Again, it becomes about the team that's playing best at the end of the year. And that was the St. Louis Cardinals who won the 2011 World Series. So I'll say it again. Why, just like in football, money, money, money? Now, people have learned finally, Bud Selig has figured out that these are terrible situations where the Yankees admitted that in 2010 they didn't try and win the division. They just lined up their pitching staff for the playoffs. If they go to 2 wild cards and that's a one-game playoff between the 2 wild cards to get into the playoffs, well, then you're going to see the Yankees try and win the AL East instead of conceding it. It's going to be a different mentality. But again, the mentality that's changed over the last 50 years is losers can win in football and in baseball. Losers could always win in basketball and hockey. I think it's been like that for so long, nobody really looked at it as losers win. But if you come in nowadays, 6th, 7th, 8th, you can still win. The last year, even Bill Russell, 68-69, the Celtics came in 4th and won the championship and was hailed as the greatest thing of all time, and it was amazing. But again, in basketball and hockey, losers could always win. That didn't used to be true in football, and it wasn't true until the late 90s in baseball. And I think the sports world is worse off for that. Although the money world, the interest world, the can we make the playoffs even though we're 10 games under 500 world, I think it's done wonders for that world. And that's all these sports are trying to do now, with so many people grabbing for the entertainment dollars, so many different things. You need to have people at least think they have a chance. And that happens in basketball now. You've got the two teams in the East, the Celtics and the Knicks, under 500 right now. They're in the playoff hunt. So you have to understand the reasons for this. Personally, I think it's sad. I think these sports should be split into divisions, and only division winners can be in the playoffs. I don't think there should be anything such as a wild card, but that ship has sailed. And it's not coming back. This is the Steve Callis Show. We're at SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Think Fish with Frank Reese on Blue Zoo Radio. Sunday nights at 8 p.m. exclusively on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
These days, you hear them everywhere. Get out of debt quick promises asking you to call right now to solve all your credit problems. But please, listen carefully. Don't make a huge mistake. There is a better way. Trinity Debt Management. Many debt settlement companies have created a dangerous misunderstanding. Simply put, debt settlement often ends up destroying your credit and ultimately may lead to asset seizure and bankruptcy. There is a better way out. Trinity Debt Management can show you how to pay off your debt, preserve your good name, save thousands in interest, and in the end, actually improve your credit rating, not destroy it. Say no to debt settlement. Say yes to debt management. Trinity Debt Management. Make the right choice and become debt-free for keeps. Call 1-800-780-0646. That's 1-800-780-0646.
SportsTalkNetwork.com is now mobile. Watch or listen to your favorite Sports Talk Network program live or on demand with the new STN web app. The STN web app works on all smartphones, including iPhones, Android, and BlackBerry. Go to m.sportstalknetwork.com on your phone's web browser and bookmark the app. No downloads and no fees. Fresh audio, video shows, sports news, and more content delivered to your phone whenever you want. SportsTalkNetwork.com. Your cities, your teams, your passion. And now on your phone.
Hikari, established in 1877 with more than 130 years of experience, is the world's foremost authority on aquatic nutrition. We know what it takes to offer you and your aquatic pets nutrition that can help them look their best and live a long and healthy life. If you're looking for the best aquatic diets for your hard-earned dollar, look no further than Hikari, the aquatic nutrition leader worldwide. For further information, visit HikariUSA.com and our direct link at BlueZooRadio.com.
You're listening to the SportsTalkNetwork.com.
SportsTalkNetwork.com, the internet broadcast giant for sports talk and entertainment programming, now features market-specific sports sites in over one dozen cities, including New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Cleveland, and Canada. And we're not done yet. More markets launching soon. Your cities, your teams, your passion. We are SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Welcome back to the Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Yeah, welcome back to the Steve Callis Show. We're looking at three different topics today for about 15 minutes each. The second one today will be about Ryan Braun, innocent or just not guilty. And the Braun test, where apparently he failed the test, was given a 50-game suspension, took it to a panel of arbitrators and won his arbitration, the first guy ever to have the first player ever with a positive drug test to have that suspension overturned by a panel of arbitrators. There's a lot of interesting stuff here, both legal and otherwise. Now, Ryan Braun, look, NL MVP last year, They couldn't have timed it any worse. You'll recall back in when he received his MVP award in New York, the 2 days before he received his MVP award, those were the 2 days of his hearing. So he literally walked out of a two-day hearing on his challenging his 50-game suspension, and then the next day accepted his MVP award. So that was a little bizarre. But the arbitrators came down with a 2-1 decision in favor of Ryan Braun, and the big to-do afterwards has really been about the legal attack. While Ryan Braun stood up and said he's 100% innocent, he's been totally cleared, he was very emotional and well-spoken when he gave his speech, but I think it rings on deaf ears on the public at large, and I think you are talking about the court of public opinion. Clearly, the attack on the collection procedure, while a brilliant legal move, and one brilliant legal move that got Ryan Braun off from suspension, clearly did not satisfy the general public at large. The view being, well, if it wasn't his sample, you should have been able to attack the sample. Now, there was some good lawyering here, but I don't know if they looked at the big picture being the court of public opinion, and maybe it's too early for this, but 15 years down the road, a possible Hall of Fame vote for Ryan Braun, because certainly the steroids guys, whether they failed the drug test or not, Rafael Palmeiro, Mark McGwire, guys like that, have gotten very little support from the Hall of Fame voters. Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, when they come up, Bonds convicted, a convicted felon, Clemens going to trial for perjury. How will they be viewed? I personally have a different view. This is beyond the scope of this discussion, but I think Barry Bonds was a Hall of Famer long before he ever took a steroid. Three MVP awards in the early 90s. Nobody with three MVP awards is not in the Hall of Fame. Clemens, you could probably make the same case, but that's beyond the scope of this. I wanted to focus on Ryan Braun. His perception, his belief, and maybe that of his lawyers, is that because the suspension was thrown out on essentially a technicality, I don't agree totally that it's a technicality, but essentially a technicality, their view of the public reaction to that, I think, is wrong. I think they thought this was going to be okay, that Ryan Braun would be able to pull it off, that he would give an impassioned speech, which he did, and somehow the public would buy it. But certainly the back of the Daily News in New York, where I live, the day after Braun gave his speech and got off, was, what a joke. Does anybody really believe that he didn't fail the drug test? Most people don't. Again, if you attack the way, and you know the history, you know the background of this, the guy collected it after a playoff game on October 1st. It was a Saturday afternoon. He didn't think he could get to FedEx on time, so he decided to take it back to his house for the weekend, Saturday afternoon till Monday at noon when he took it to FedEx. Now, the stories inside the guy's house differ. Some people say it was put in a refrigerator. Lester Munson, the Chicago attorney, reported that the guy left it on his desk in a Tupperware container. Either way, there was enough there to challenge. The baseball rules say it has to be stored in, quote, a cool, secure place. Well, if it's in your house on the desk in a Tupperware container, that's probably not a cool place. If it's in your refrigerator, I think we'd all agree that's a cool place, but is it secure? Do you have five kids? Did you have six people over for dinner? Was the refrigerator locked? So there's some very interesting things there. I suggested in an article up at SportsTalkNetwork.com that immediately baseball has to change their protocols for doing this thing. In 2012, it's an easy thing to send a FedEx package in a refrigerated container. It's done all the time now. So that's what should have been done. As for the Saturday afternoon thing, you have to try and take it. Maybe he couldn't take it before the game. Maybe he should be allowed to take it before the game to make sure it gets into a FedEx container. Maybe most of them should be taken on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. Saturday's a problem because no Sunday delivery, but again, the protocol has to change. You can put these things in refrigerated containers. The guy said he called his boss and said, I'd rather it be in my house than in a FedEx receptacle somewhere or in a waiting station for Monday delivery, which would be true unless it was in a refrigerated package. Then you wouldn't care. So yes, Ryan Braun does get off on essentially a technicality. Does that mean that that was his sample? Well, it certainly seems to be. When the sample got to Montreal, it had been, you know, sealed and then sealed again and then in a sealed package. According to the people in Montreal, none of that was tampered with. But Ryan Braun would lead you to believe that the collector did something. He really, I wonder if his lawyers went over this speech with him. And again, he gave a very convincing performance. Does he really, really believe it? Well, only he knows if he took something or didn't take something. Again, in baseball, unlike football, you have some defenses, you have some leeway. And this was, frankly, some brilliant lawyering to get him to understand that there would be a problem. I wonder if the discussions in the room were, if we just attack this, the collection procedure, we might get hurt on the other end. I don't know if anybody, frankly, foresaw that or not. I just really, really don't know. It's hard to tell. But Ryan Braun, I put it in quotes, just close quote, not guilty. You certainly can't say on this fact pattern he's innocent. Now, forward-looking, unless baseball changes their ways, again, every prior drug appeal to a panel of arbitrators was denied. I think the Major League Baseball is 12 for 12. Now they're 12 for 13. But that doesn't mean that Ryan Braun is innocent. That doesn't mean he's not going to get booed in opposing ballparks. And that certainly doesn't mean that he's going to get those Hall of Fame votes that you know he would have gotten if he had continued his career the way it is for another fill-in-the-blank, 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 years. It's really an interesting case. It really sets the bar at what's going to happen the next time this comes down the pike. The first thing the lawyers are going to do is say, well, what was the collection procedure? Now, the player might say, hold it, I'm totally innocent. There's no way I took any of this stuff, and I saw what happened to Ryan Braun. And then you'll have to look at attacking the sample itself. But I heard an interview with Gary Wadler, famous scientist, former president of the World Anti-Doping Agency, who essentially poo-pooed everything about Braun and his defense. No way anything in the sample could have changed. There was synthetic, not natural, testosterone in that sample. No way that would have happened, even if it was out for an extra 2 days. No way this guy didn't do something. He came down very hard on Ryan Braun. And that was his thought pattern, frankly. Wadler thinks the whole thing is a joke, and I think he thinks that the public at large just really doesn't understand what's going on. So, having said all of that, I think there still is time for baseball to change their ways. There's been some talk about baseball possibly appealing this because baseball, again, has never lost one of these things. Again, going 12 for 12, and now they're 12 for 13. But if they take this to federal court, I think they're going to lose. In fact, I'm sure they're going to lose because the standard in federal court to review one of these arbitration awards is essentially manifest disregard of the law, and there was no manifest disregard of the law here because, again, quite frankly, this arbitrator made a reason, Sham Das, who has been an arbitrator for a very long time for baseball, he has held for the other side for Major League Baseball in numerous cases before. He's going to be able to give a reasoned opinion and will give a reasoned opinion. But I don't think it's going to happen in the near future where you're going to be able to appeal and win for sure if you're Major League Baseball. The days of them winning every time are over. This is the Steve Callis Show. We're at SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Get your college sports news when you want it, 24/7 online and on demand. SportsTalkNetwork.com. Your cities, your teams, your passion.
You want to put your nest egg somewhere where it will grow. Gold has given investors a 300% return over the last 10 years. You want an investment that's safe, Gold American Eagles are guaranteed by the U.S. government for weight and purity. You want to work with someone you can trust. Blanchard & Company was founded over 35 years ago. They have an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. You want an investment that's liquid in case you need your money fast. Well, Blanchard guarantees to buy back any gold you invest in with them at the current market rates anytime you want to sell. And you want someone you can talk to ask questions and find out what's right for you. Blanchard has set up a special toll-free line to give you a free one-on-one consultation and information with a gold expert. Just call 800-309-5530. That's 800-309-5530. For free gold information, call now. 800-309-5530. 800-309-5530.
Your Major League Baseball news when you want it 24/7, online and on demand. SportsTalkNetwork.com. Your cities, your teams, your passion. With nearly 30 years of experience in the electrical surplus and distribution business, Supply Line Electric has now taken its business onto the internet with a completely automated website for inventory control and order entry. Specializing in motor starters, contactors, coils, contact kits, push buttons, pilot lights, photo and proximity sensors, and many more items, including obsolete and hard-to-find parts. Visit us today at SupplyLineElectric.com. And don't forget that all orders ship the same business day. Supply Line Electric.com, your 24/7 distributor of electrical, motor control, and automation parts. Get your NBA news when you want it, 24/7, online and on demand. SportsTalkNetwork.com, your cities, your teams, your passion.
Great job, guys. We just got certified loose slots by Las Vegas Advisor.
Yeah, but George, we're so tired.
We've been giving out so much money, and look, Jackpot's arm hurts because of all the pulls.
Well, guys, don't do it for me. Do it for our guests. Get back out there.
All right.
All right? Hands in.
Palm slots pay lots.
Palm slots are certified up to 36.85% looser than the Las Vegas Strip and local jurisdictions by the Las Vegas Advisor.
Want to know what's going on in the world of professional wrestling and sports entertainment?
It's still real to me, damn it!
Join Paul Belfie and Mike Pitak.
You are a freaking lunatic!
Wednesdays at 7 p.m. for Pro Wrestling Insider.
Awesome!
On SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Listen, if you're considering buying hardwood flooring, don't do anything until you've written down this number and received your free Lumber Liquidators catalog.
With high quality, with an unbeatable price tag.
Call in the next 10 minutes to get your free catalog.
What I bought at Lumber Liquidators is a vastly higher quality than flooring I had installed 6 years ago, and for a fraction of the cost.
So if you want great hardwood flooring at unbeatable prices, trust Lumber Liquidators. We buy direct from the mills. Call right now to get our flooring guide and catalog absolutely free. It's filled with top quality hardwood flooring, including solid hardwoods, laminates, and bamboos, and even Bella Wood prefinished flooring with a 100-year transfer. For a warranty, the same floor Bob Vila has in his home. This free catalog is full of tips, ideas, and our flooring project list to make your buying decisions easy. Hurry, call right now to get a copy of this free guide and catalog. Call 877-407-9413 to get your free copy now. 877-407-9413. 877-407-9413.
Welcome back to the Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Yeah, we're back on the Steve Callis Show. We're going to spend the rest of the time talking about the Jeremy Lin phenomenon, but not just in the way that you've heard people talk about it for hours and hours for the last month or so, but really the effect that this has had on other kids, high school kids, college kids, travel team kids, and in different sports, not just in basketball. By now, everybody knows the story of Jeremy Lin. He did come out of nowhere. I thought the most interesting comment was the Kobe Bryant comment when he said after Lin had torched the Lakers for 38, he said, this kid couldn't have been bad and now just got good. He had to always have the skills, and he was just overlooked. And I totally agree with that. If you've seen the interviews with Jeremy Lin, and they had a 30-minute one on MSG, it's really cool the way he does it. He is obviously upset that he did not get his chance earlier and thrilled that he made the most of it. But clearly, and he makes no bones about it, he just says it in a nice way. He's not an outwardly bitter guy. But clearly he thought that he was viewed negatively initially because he was an Asian American. Clearly he thought because he went to Harvard, this did not help him on an NBA court. Clearly, and here's what he said, I didn't, quote, get the benefit of the doubt, close quote. And that's really what we're talking about. How is it that this kid, who had NBA quickness at Harvard for sure, I saw him play that year that Cornell was really, really good and won two games in the tournament. I remember him against Cornell and just remember him being unbelievably quick. I think the only thing that might come back to earth here is his shooting, because he runs the pick and roll as good as any point guard in the NBA. I don't care what anyone says. He's getting criticized left and right. The Heat really showed him what high-level basketball is all about. But it's interesting that people are saying this kid's going to be a flash in the pan, or he's really not that good, or he's overrated. Yet you have every team game planning for him. The Miami Heat game planned for him. The Dallas Mavericks sent Sean Marion out to guard him. Why? Because the Lakers sent Derek Fisher out to guard him, and he wound up with 38. If the Mavericks had sent out a modern-day Jason Kidd, not a young Jason Kidd, to try and guard him, they knew it couldn't happen. So Sean Marion came out to get him. Now, if you have Sean Marion of the Dallas Mavericks, long, rangy, quick, defensive, you have him come out to get you. To me, that says you've arrived in the league no matter what the critics are saying. So Jeremy Lin, yes, he came a long way. Yes, he overcame a lot, and I agree with him. He did not get the benefit of the doubt. Is there stereotyping here? Absolutely. Absolutely. You see an Asian kid walk onto a high-level basketball game, most of the people in that game are going to look at him sideways like there's something wrong with him. You can't be that good. What are you doing on this court? But he's proved them all wrong now, thankfully. And do I think the next kid, the next top Asian American player who comes along is going to be looked at in the negative light that Jeremy Lin was looked at? I don't think so. That doesn't mean he'll be as good as Jeremy Lin. But he certainly paved the way for other Asian Americans, you could argue other minorities, to get a fairer look. You know, the criticism, it's amazing to me. How about this? Everybody now says, oh, he can't go left. Well, that's a bunch of baloney. Or virtually every right-handed point guard can't go left. You always drive the point guard to the weakest side. Every right-handed point guard has to work on his left. Every left-handed point guard has to work on his right. But look at the evidence. Go Google that John Wall video in the summer of 2009 when Jeremy Lin played on the Mavericks and John Wall was the number one pick. And Jeremy Lin more than holds his own against, in fact, outplays John Wall in the summer league game. Look at the first two moves on that video. What happens? He blows by Wall to his left. Look at this shot against the Sacramento Kings where he dribbles in on the left side, dribbles under the basket, does not shoot, dribbles out left-handed around to the foul line, and then comes swooping back in for a left-handed layup. What was that about? How about the incredible spin move on Derek Fisher that everybody shows on the highlight films? He dribbles right, but he spins to his left to go around Derek Fisher. Does that count? How about the only basket he scored against Miami, as bad as he played, where he comes in from the left side, absorbs a hit from someone on Miami, and then lays the ball in left-handed? Is everybody watching? I mean, really, it's just incredible. How about the thunderous dunk against Washington where, like, he got an incredible ovation? Yes, he dunked righty, but his first move was to his left, and when he got the man to commit, then he crossed over to his right to dunk it. Don't any of these count for anything? Now, is he better to his left than to his right? No. Is Steve Nash? Is John Wall? Is fill in the blank any right-handed point guard? Come on. If there's one out of 100 right-handed point guards who's better to his left than his right, that's a lot. So have an understanding when you hear this. You hear people, the scouting report, beat him up and force him to his left. Well, I think that's the scouting report on any guard who's not super strong. Beat him up and force him to his weak side. If he was a lefty point guard, it would be beat him up and force him right. But they beat up Jeremy Lin, and he's played really well. I mean, in his 11 starts as an NBA player, he's averaging 22 points and 8 assists. I mean, those are star numbers. Now, I did write a couple of articles up at sportstalknetwork.com. I thought they should have put him on the All-Star team, the regular All-Star team. Originally, David Stern lost his mind and said he wasn't going to let him play in the Rising Stars. Now, the problem with the Rising Stars game was, and yes, he was terrible against Miami, but that was on the second day of a back-to-back. So he played Wednesday night, Thursday night, and then showed up for the Rising Stars game Friday night. If you let him play Sunday, he would have had 2 days of rest. So he was a non-factor in the Rising Stars game. Not that that matters. The point was to recognize what this kid had done. A lot of people, including David Stern, thought he hadn't done enough to be on the All-Star team. But that's ridiculous because the kid was the MVP of the NBA in the month of February. Yeah, it's only 1 month now, but it's not two games or four games or six games. Who turned the Knicks around? Who saved their season? Who saved their franchise? It's Jeremy Lin, Jeremy Lin, Jeremy Lin. They did a lot of it without Carmelo and Amari. That's how good this kid is at making people better. And what's the test of a good point guard? Making everybody else better. And this kid makes everybody else better. I mean, Tyson Chandler looks like a scorer. Jared Jeffries looks like a scorer at times. Steve Novak has had his career revitalized. Landry Fields, who was playing better before Lin started, but is playing great since Lin started. So the problem is really with the superstars and incorporating them back into the Knick rotation now, Amari and Carmelo. Of course, there are real questions about Amari's health. He does not seem to have the explosiveness. He did lose his brother. You know, how much has that affected him? But he doesn't seem to have the explosiveness under the basket. The ability to jump up quickly and strongly and powerfully, that doesn't seem to be there. I don't know if it's his back or if it's his knee. You know, a lot of people shied away from signing Stoudemire because of his knees. So the Knicks can go places. They're not going to beat Miami. Jeremy Lin, I think, is already a good point guard to a very good point guard in the NBA. You can't teach what this guy has. You can't teach his court vision. You can't teach his sense of play. You can't teach how he runs the pick and roll. These are snap decisions that have to be made instantly, depending on what happens literally at the time you come across the pick. And he can do it. He makes 25-foot bounce passes for layups. This kid is a very good NBA point guard already. Now, does he have to get a little stronger? Yeah. Does the stamina have to improve? Yeah. But he went from nothing to playing like, from literally playing 0 to 2 to 5 minutes to playing 35 to 40 to 45 minutes. So that's going to be tough. But can he play in the NBA? Absolutely. I'll say it again. If you're game planning for Jeremy Lin, even if you game plan and stop him, he's an NBA player and a good one. So I think it's funny he has to learn to go left. He has to learn all this stuff. Frankly, most of the top NBA point guards are not good defenders. Why? It's virtually impossible to guard John Wall. Can you really guard John Wall? I mean, really, can you guard John Wall? Could you really guard Steve Nash in the D'Antoni system? And that's another thing. Has the D'Antoni system made Jeremy Lin a better point guard? Absolutely. But how many teams play the pick and roll in the NBA? All of them? 28 of them, 25 of them, whatever it is, it's a huge number. So he can run the pick and roll with any big man in America. If he can run the pick and roll with Jared Jeffries and Tyson Chandler and turn Chandler at 25 points one game, it was like unbelievable. If he can run the pick and roll with those two guys, he can run the pick and roll with any big man in the game. So understand what you're seeing. You're seeing a point guard with a brain. And I don't mean the brain of a Harvard graduate, although that's very impressive. I mean the brain of a guy with a very high basketball IQ. Street smarts and book smarts, two different things. Jeremy Lin apparently has them both. So as you see him going forward, watch the moves he makes to the left. Compare him to other point guards. He's as good as most of them already. Name 10 point guards in the NBA. Jeremy Lin won't be 10th on that list. Whatever your list is. And if you name the bottom 10 point guards in the NBA, Jeremy Lin's ahead of all 10 of them, in my opinion. But I did want to talk for a few minutes about, to me, the Jeremy Lin effect, not in the NBA, not for the New York Knicks franchise, but frankly in the world of youth sports, in the world of travel teams, in the world of high school ball, in the world of college ball, maybe to some degree even in the world of the NBA. Because here's what I think is going to happen now. These coaches, and I don't care what anyone says, you know, it's funny, after he did what he did for a month, essentially, it's like every coach you talk to, oh, yeah, I knew he could play in the NBA. Oh, yeah, we really liked him. Oh, yeah, I knew. Oh, yeah, he could do it. Yet he was just days away. If Baron Davis had not been hurt in New York the second time, Davis had been hurt all year, was about to come back, and then got hurt again. If he had not been hurt the second time, there's a good chance Jeremy Lin would not have played and would have been waived or would have got 7 minutes in garbage time where he doesn't seem to shine. He does seem to be a primetime player. So he was inches away from being waived for a third time. And if you watch the interviews with him, there are times he did think about giving up, but he didn't, thankfully. But have there been Jeremy Lins in the past? Have there been guys who can play in the NBA who just didn't get that chance? I think the answer to that is absolutely yes. We don't know who they are because they didn't make it. But Jeremy Lin almost became one of those faceless, almost nameless guys. Tony Douglas had to prove he couldn't be the starting point guard in New York. Mike Bibby had to prove he couldn't be the starting point guard in New York. Iman Shumpert had to prove he couldn't be the starting point guard in New York. Baron Davis had to be hurt, because when Baron Davis is healthy, he's a very good NBA point guard. He had to not be hurt. He was hurt the whole season, and then he got hurt again. So he couldn't prove that he could be the NBA starting point guard for the Knicks. It was only after all of those guys and the fact that they were going to have to waive Jeremy Lin on a Tuesday after his 10-day contract was up that got him that playing time, and also the fact that the Knicks were playing back-to-backs. So on the one hand, he's very fortunate. On the other hand, you can tell by watching him talk. It's like, how could I have not gotten my chance before this? And I have been cut by two teams and almost cut by a third. So now do coaches at all levels, youth sports, high school, JV, varsity, college, do they look down the bench a little differently? I think they do. Do they throw in the last guy on the bench hoping to catch lightning in a bottle? Well, I don't know about that. But I think they pay a little more attention. Guys like Jeremy Lin are put into a box. They say he can't go left or he can't shoot, or maybe they have a predisposition against him because he's an Asian American, or a predisposition against him because he played in the Ivy League, which has produced some very good basketball players, but certainly not a lot of excellent professional basketball players. All of these predisposed notions were blown to bits by Jeremy Lin. I've heard of at least two youth coaches. And this could be the negative effect of Jeremy Lin as well. I've heard of at least two youth travel basketball coaches who have gotten phone calls from parents irate with their kids' playing time saying, well, look at Jeremy Lin. Give my kid a chance. Now, at the youth travel level, everybody should get a chance, obviously. That's a whole other story we could talk about for hours some other time. But these kids at the lower levels, high school, JV, even high school varsity, I think they'll be looked at a little differently. I really think Asian kids will be looked at differently. Will it be another Jeremy Lin? Well, I don't know about that. Have there been kids like him before him that could have played in the NBA? And by that, I don't mean Asian American or Harvard necessarily. I mean kids who could really play who never got the chance? Absolutely, there had to have been. Scouting is not a perfect science, no matter what you hear. People are always going to go for the bigger, stronger, faster guy. In baseball, people want the kid who throws 95. They don't want the kid who throws 88 and knows how to pitch. It's very, very hard for those kids to get seen, recognized, and be given an opportunity. And oh, by the way, if they get one, it's one and done. I think this is what Jeremy Lin was referring to when he said he didn't get the benefit of the doubt. He was good enough to play for the Dallas Mavericks Summer League, to be signed by the Golden State Warriors, to be signed by the Houston Rockets, to be signed by the New York Knicks. But he never got a fair chance in Dallas. He never got a fair chance in Golden State. He never got a fair chance in Houston. And guess what? He almost never got a fair chance in New York. But he did. And when he did, obviously he took great advantage of it. So how does that translate to high school varsity basketball player in, I don't know, Ohio. I think a coach, if a kid shows something in practice, I think now maybe a coach says, well, maybe I'll get a few minutes in garbage time. And maybe that's his opportunity that he would not have gotten before Jeremy Lin. Does that mean he's going to go in, play great, become a starter, and become great, and go to college and play? No, of course not. But I think at least for now, in 2012, it shifted the view a little bit. Now, when a parent sends an email to a travel coach and says, my kid's not playing, he's sitting at the end of the bench, look at Jeremy Lin, give him a chance, I'll say it again, in youth travel leagues, and certainly in youth house leagues, all of these kids, including the last kids on the bench, should always get an opportunity to play. Now, in youth travel leagues, you'll hear, well, we're here to win. We're not here to, you know, give everybody a quarter of playing time. But again, when these kids are filling the blank, 10, 12, 14, you got to give them a chance to develop. You got to give them an opportunity. It's a truism, you can't measure heart. You know, look at the NFL combines. Those are great. How fast can you run the 40? How high can you jump? How long can you broad jump? How fast is your shuttle run? That's all great. But how are you going to perform under pressure? How are you going to be committed day to day to getting better? You don't know. How big is your heart? How much pain can you play with? You don't know. How much of a leader are you going to be? Jeremy Lin's a leader on the New York Knicks, but he was a leader at Harvard. He was a leader at Palo Alto High School, where he led them to a state championship over a much better Matter Day team, a perennial power in California basketball. So how do you quantify these things? Hard to tell. There's really only one way how you're going to know how a guy plays in a pressure game, and that's to put him in a pressure game. So I think this has had a much broader effect. Yes, I know about the international effect in China, and that's all wonderful. And Jeremy Lin deserves a lot of money. And I know he doesn't do it for the money, but he deserves a lot of money, and good for him. It's a great story. But I think this is going to help people who are sitting on the end of the bench, people who know they have the ability in whatever sport they're in, even in non-sports. The guy who doesn't get the chance, who's hoping for the opportunity wherever. That, yes, it can happen. So I think forward-looking, kids are going to get a better chance. Kids are going to get a better look. Do I think it's going to last forever? No. Do I think it's the first sign of negative play? You give that kid on the end of the bench, you didn't give two thoughts to all year, you give him 10 minutes because you lose him by 30. He doesn't play well, I was right. You're not going to get another chance. But this is one of the greatest mistakes in the history of scouting. And people are saying, well, hold it now. He played on the Mavericks summer team. He was signed by three different teams. Obviously, people knew he could play. Well, not exactly. Not exactly. The Knicks had a very good NBA point guard on their bench, as did the Rockets, as did Golden State. I love the one that says, he's much stronger now. He really wasn't that strong. Well, hold it now. He got released in December by Golden State. He got released, I think, on Christmas Day by the Houston Rockets. Don't tell me he got stronger from December till the first week in February. That's preposterous. So give this kid a lot of credit, but I don't even think people can understand. Yes, you can understand the Asian American and all the way across to China effect it's had, and how people are going to buy millions of dollars in Lin equipment, etc., and that's all fantastic. But I'm talking about the effect that he's had on the rosters all over the world in various sports, and maybe even in non-sports, where a guy will say, you haven't even given me a chance, and fill in the blank, in the bank, in the law firm, in wherever. Just give me a chance. I can do it. It's a very interesting dynamic. So I think, again, forward-looking, the Lin effect, as great as it's been on the Knicks, and it's been great on the Knicks. Again, maybe you don't understand what the Knicks were before. They were 8-15. They had lost like 10 of their last 12. They were the biggest underachieving team in the NBA, given their talent. And he turned them around with the snap of a finger. He turned them around in that Nets game where he came off the bench and then he started and just turned them around. Are they going to beat the Miami Heat? No. Are they going to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder? No. Are they going to beat the Chicago Bulls? I don't think so. And I say I don't think so because I don't know if Derrick Rose is going to be healthy the whole year. But are they in the mix now? 100% they're in the mix. Again, how does that translate to the world of high school sports, college sports, youth sports, travel sports? I think it translates tremendously. I think coaches are wrong a lot. I think coaches put people into boxes like these coaches put Jeremy Lin into a box. As he said, I never got the benefit of the doubt. And I'm sure that's true. So again, was there stereotyping? Asian Americans, how can they play ball? Pfft, of course there was. Was there outright racism? A more interesting question, but I think there was to some degree. The predisposition to think, oh, how can this kid play? He's an Asian American who went to Harvard. But this is a very tough kid. I think there are other people like him. I think there are people in the past who could have played in the league and got passed over. Did D'Antoni's system help? Absolutely. Could he be a good NBA point guard without D'Antoni's system? Absolutely. And again, I think if you don't know that, you don't know what you're watching. Can he go left? Yeah, he can go left. I don't care if 100 people tell you he can't. In fact, going the opposite way is usually the criticism of a guy if you can't find anything else wrong with his game. I think he shot surprisingly well. I think he might come to earth down to earth like that, but so what? This guy should be good for it. He should be able to average 8 assists in the NBA. That makes him an excellent point guard. I think he can do that. And now he's got a bunch of guys who can finish with him on the Knicks. Assuming Stoudemire is healthy and Carmelo is healthy, J.R. Smith gets into the flow of thing. I mean, my goodness, those are three really good scorers. Steve Novak for open threes. So the story of Jeremy Lin continues. The story of those before him that you never heard of probably doesn't continue. I'll say it again. There must have been people who we just don't know their names, who could have disappeared into oblivion and did disappear into oblivion. My point is Jeremy Lin came very close to being one of them. And now not only is he not, he's the most celebrated basketball player in the world, at least in the month of February 2012. Sports Illustrated 2 weeks in a row, Time Magazine, come on. But I think he deserves every part of it. The humbleness we love, all that stuff. You love that stuff. In the world of show-offs, this guy deflects praise and tells everyone how great his teammates are. But he's the guy who turned it around. I'll say it again. That should translate to other sports, to other teams, to kids on the bench with a dream. Not that they're going to be Jeremy Lin. That's not the point. The point is that they be given the opportunity, and then if they do something with it, fine. And if they don't, at least they could say, hey, I at least was given some opportunity. That's all we're talking about here. This is the Steve Callis Show, or at SportsTalkNetwork.com.